Welcome to the Financial Management Magazine podcast series, a service of the Association of International Certified Professional Accountants. This series features discussions with chartered global management accountants and other experts about the topics, trends and technologies that are transforming the accounting profession.
Did you know that some CIMA students in the 1940s were so dedicated to becoming qualified accountants that they studied for and took exams as prisoners of war? That's just one of the facts you'll learn in the latest FM Magazine podcast. I'm Senior Editor Drew Adamack. In this episode, FM Magazine Senior Editor Oliver Rowe speaks with CIMA historian Martin Farah about how CIMA has led the profession in an evolution from cost to management accounting. Martin is the author of the CIMA history, Leading the Transformation, 100 Years and Beyond. Here's Oliver.
Our guest today is Martin Farah from the Association. More on Martin's experience in a minute, but first let's get straight into the questions. The Institute was formed in 1919. Why was it formed then?
I think first we have to look to the Great War, and there's a great quote from Harari in 21 Lessons for the 21st Century. War spreads ideas, technology, and people far more quickly than commerce. And the Great War brought isolated individuals together to form a cost accounting community. Cost accounting had been in pockets of industry before the First World War, but the First World War amplified its benefit. In 1915, the Ministry of New Missions was formed by the British government, and it turned to costing systems to eliminate excessive profits in armaments contracts. So 1918, the war ends, and you've got these individual cost accountants who feel they have a greater purpose and want to do more. So in February 1919, a group of seven individuals come together to discuss forming an association of cost accountants. Now, at the time in Britain, 1919, it was a turbulent year. Riots in major cities, trade union strikes, the returning soldiers were mutinying. The British government deployed tanks onto the streets of Britain to restore order, and the government feared a Bolshevik revolution. So this is happening at the same time as these seven individuals are discussing cost accounting. And what you get is the other professional bodies kind of think, is this another case of working class militancy? But what these individuals do is they base their cost accounting institute on the traditional Victorian style of professional body. So really, they may have been seen as a threat, but they were actually using traditional methods to pursue cost accounting.
That's fascinating. And Martin, your background is in military history, and your current role is Associate Technical Director in Management Accounting Research and Development at the Association. So let's move on. So the story unfolds. From the 1920s, costing developed as a science. Could you explain how that happened?
Okay. Well, at the beginning of the 20s, after the First World War, individuals were trying to make sense and imagine what a post-war society would be. And that's the same for the individuals that formed the Institute. They're looking to standardize costing and provide repeatable costing techniques that are written down that they can then propagate to the wider world. So in the 1920s to the 1930s, it's about collecting a body of knowledge that can be promoted to the wider community. And the Institute provides a safe space to test rules of thumb, to debate, to write down, and then also redefine what's going on in the world. And that's done through various mechanisms. In January 1920, There's the first institute syllabus. You've got the first examinations in December 1920. June 1921, the first edition of the institute journal, The Cost Accountant. And from February 1922, there's a national cost conference every year. So these are places where articles can be put into the journal for debate. National cost conferences, they have lectures, they have a speaker, and then a debate afterwards, and then that's written up into the journal. So you can see progress through it. And so the key milestone for this time of the Institute happens in March 1937, when it publishes the cost accounting terminology. And the costing terminology, it defines the Institute space. It gives a common language to everybody who's practicing in cost accounting. So it really brings everything together.
And then the Second World War starts in 1939 and interrupts the Institute. How did it manage to survive in that period?
If we look at branch events, they became increasingly difficult to hold. I mean, it's difficult to hold when you've got blackouts, curfews, and aerial bombardments were taking their toll on Britain. I think also there's the Second World War brings out the pioneering spirit of the Institute member and student. In March 1940, prisoners of war had been able to request books from the Bodleian Library, and through the Red Cross they were sent to prisoner of war camps. That meant that students studying for institute exams had access to books which they could use. And then in June 1942, through the Red Cross, the Institute held its first examinations in German prisoner of war camps. So it just shows the commitment that our members have for moving themselves forward in a situation when they didn't know when they would be released. And then it's also quite interesting that from 1943 onwards, the Institute Journal starts talking about post-war planning and the cost accountant's role in post-war planning. So they're not just thinking about the war happening, what's going on now. They're also thinking about how industry will need to change and adapt once the war comes to an end. So it's a really interesting period for the Institute.
They're fascinating details that you give of that period. Thank you. And then the next stage in SEMA's history is to the mid-1970s, where there's the move from costing to management accounting. Could you say a bit more about that period, please?
Certainly. If we look at the Institute in 1945, it had 1,840 members. By 1975, this has increased to 20,000. And there's a fundamental difference between the member joining in 1945 and the member joining in 1975. One was a cost accountant, one was a management accountant. And also their tools that they used to carry out their roles were different. The 1945 accountant used tabulating machines and punch cards. And these were replaced by electronic calculators and computer terminals used by the management accountant. So their capability completely changes as technology changes. And what happens is the cost accountant, management accountant moves from the factories and the industrial works floors to the office. Now, this was a kind of, at that point in time, it was a back office. It's where statistics and data are collected to provide management with trends and patterns for business decision making, which is quite different to a cost accountant in the 1920s who was observing and recording processes and people and what machinery we were doing and changing how processes went.
Thank you, Martin. And if we break the history down into stages, the final stage we can look at is the move from management accounting to value. So from sort of 1976 to the present day. What are the key things you'd pick out from that period?
This is, for me, this is a more difficult period because it's difficult to find the patterns and trends as we're so, I feel personally still too close to the events and really understanding what their impact is on the Institute and its membership. But what we can see is that management accountants move out of the back office into the centre of the business. They're no longer just focused on producing reports internally, but are now focused on communicating to the whole of the business and also to external stakeholders who influence decision making. And the tools that they use to carry out their role have changed. In the early 70s, it was kind of one computer terminal in the office, which probably took a whole floor or a large percentage of the space, to an individual personal computer, spreadsheets. And we're now doing our work on smartphones and using artificial intelligence and algorithms. So there's been a big change since 1975. And the Institute has shifted too. It's now global and seeks to play a greater role in the community at large. And the Institute has had to redefine its space to a new generation of accountants. Just as the costing terminology did in 1937, the Global Management Accounting Principles in 2014 defines the Institute space for the 21st century. And that's moving forward also in 2017 to the formation of the association. And in January 2019, the 2019 Professional Qualifications Syllabus and Competency Framework, which looks at the future of finance and how the management accountant works in a digital world.
Thank you, Martin. And you mentioned technology, and technology has been a recurring theme over the past 100 years. Today we have AI, but how's that different from the mechanisation in the late 1920s?
It's a really interesting question. You kind of had mechanisation came in around 1928, and there were debates about whether machinery caused unemployment and how man and machine should interact together. In the 1955 to about 1960, you also have the digital age where the first computers come in. And it's the same thing then. It's accountants are thinking, well, how is this impacting my role? What do I need to do differently? How do I use this new technology to make what I do better? Again, that happened in 1980 to about 84 when the microcomputer came in. There are articles in the journal that were talking about the death of bookkeeping.
Can we say that history repeats itself in any way?
Throughout those three periods, it's always been about how you can use the technology to better your skills and influence, and that you need to be human. And I don't think that's changed.
And in 1975, CIMA was awarded the Royal Charter. That was a big event. Could you describe how it came about, please?
Yeah. Council first started talking about applying for a Royal Charter in 1919 at one of its first council meetings. So it was such an important thing that they wanted to achieve. They started their first application in 1921, and it was submitted in 1923. And by 1924, the Privy Council, the UK Privy Council, declined to give the Institute a Royal Charter. At that point in time, it cost £500 to apply for a Royal Charter, and the Institute really didn't have the money to keep applying. But what really changed in the 70s was in 1967, the six UK bodies went into merger talks to have one UK accounting body. This failed in 1970, and then the Institute said, well, we need to strike out alone and make a name for ourselves. We need to make a difference from this failed merger. So they then applied for the Royal Charter, and it was granted in February 1975. It's a seal of quality of how you judge the profession, the body. So it was a real big milestone for the Institute in getting the Royal Charter.
Looking into the future, are there lessons that can be learned from the past?
Yes, I think over the last 100 years, I think for me, it's the power of the member and student to make a difference. I mean, this institute is nothing without its members. If you as members and students aren't there debating, sharing how you're using systems in your organisations, we're nothing. I mean, you're living examples to employers of the abilities and the benefits of a management accounting in business. So I think that's the lesson, is the pioneering spirit all the way through of individuals who've made this institute what it is today. And I think the other lesson is that technologies come and go. Slide rule, smartphone. We've survived them and we've gone on to do brilliant and amazing stuff with new technologies. I think we have to embrace them.
And finally, what would be your top three interesting facts that people listening may not know about Seema's history?
Okay, a personal favourite for me is 1936, and the London and District branch announced a Cost and Works coach holiday that for £5 that would cover travel, meals and accommodation, and it included a tour of the West Midlands of the United Kingdom. They went to Port Sunlight, the soap manufacturers, and had a tour of that. They went to a towel and rug factory. They visited collieries in the Sherwood Forest. They went to steelworks in Sheffield. And then they had a tour of the Austin Motor Works in Birmingham. So it was a real kind of social event where people could share ideas, debate. There was a second coach holiday in 1937, well attended, but then I think the Second World War got in the way and it never happened again. But that's one of my personal milestones that I like. Then the second one is June 1950, there was an Anglo-American Productivity Council investigation into the uses of costing information, and this team that went over to America from the UK was led by an institute member and the institute's director at the time. And their report that was published in October 1950, it uses the term management accountancy for the first time. So that's a point in time where management accountancy, before that, it's never mentioned in the journals. 1950, there it is, and it's that move from costing to management starts then. And then my third kind of highlight milestone is the Institute's pulling power. For a small institute, 1932, we had less than 1,000 members, and Prince George, later the Duke of Kent, was the guest speaker at the Institute's annual banquet. So to get the fifth in line to the throne to talk to an institute that's, at that time, minuscule, is amazing. And the same can be said for 1961, Harold Wilson. He was the guest speaker at the national conference for that year. And then when the Institute celebrated its 50th anniversary in 1969, Harold Wilson sent a personal telegram from 10 Downing Street as Prime Minister to the Institute, thanking the Institute for its contribution to British industry. So it's just for a small institute at that time, it could bring big names to talk on its behalf.
It's been a fascinating conversation, Martin. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This podcast is designed to provide illustrative information with respect to the subject matter covered and does not represent an official opinion or position of the Association of International Certified Professional Accountants or any of its subsidiaries or affiliates. It is provided with the understanding that the association, its affiliates, and subsidiaries are not engaged in rendering legal, accounting, or other professional services. If such advice or expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional person should be sought. The association, its subsidiaries, and affiliates make no representations, warranties, or guarantees as to and assume no responsibility for the content or application of the material contained herein, and expressly disclaim all liability for such damages arising out of the use of, reference to, or reliance on such material.